921. Welcome back to the Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Emily Kopp, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Information technology has entered a new era. You can see it as agencies adopt mobile devices, clouds, virtualization, and wireless. This new wave of computing is transforming how agencies go about their work and how they fulfill their missions. Well, to explore all of this in detail, we've got a panel of special guests joining us in studio this hour as part of our report, A New Era in Technology.
Our guests are Bob Reese, the Chief Information Officer at the Energy Department. Gunter Weibel, is Director of the Smithsonian Digitization Program Office. Charles McClam is Deputy CIO of the Agriculture Department. And Micah Cross is Program Manager for USDA's Commuter Benefits. It's great to have you all with us this morning. And why don't we start with those technologies? Often they are used to support missions, but in recent times they also enable new missions or transform missions. So I'd like to start generally by discussing examples of how this can happen or is happening in your agency, this transformation or enablement of new missions. Why don't we start with Charles McClam?
Okay. Thank you, Tom. For the Department of Agriculture, we have a very high-end initiative that we're pushing called Conservation Desktop Streamline Initiative. That initiative is being designed, developed using mobile applications, mobile desktops, laptop devices, to actually take about 70% of our workforce, the workforce that supports Natural Resources and Conservation Services Agency, move them closer to the customer stakeholder in the field and allow them to do things interactively on laptops, notebooks, and other mobile devices to support clients in the field. We're expecting to roll that out in a full deployment around mid 2014, and it's going to bring about quite a few economies of scale to allow our employees to touch the customer more so than we have in the past.
So it sounds like a whole new architecture for the systems underneath all of that.
Yes, it is. It is a new wave of technology that we're bringing to bear to support the customer and the diverse missions that we have across NRCS, Natural Resources and Conservation Services. And it's going to allow us to phase out a number of legacy systems that are old, antiquated systems that are really, really churning on the last, run.
I think the really great thing about this panel of guests that we have here is that you're all using new technology in very different, very cool ways. Gunter, I just want to ask you to describe what's going on with the Smithsonian with your 3D museum.
Yeah, we just had a very, very exciting week last week. We launched Smithsonian X3D, which is a new website at 3d.si.edu where people can interact with 3D models of some of the Smithsonian's treasures. So you can go online, you can look at the Wright Flyer, you can spin the model, turn it around, and investigate it from all angles. And not only that, you can take measurements, you can adjust the lighting, you can fly into details of the model. And we also had our curators create tours of these models so they can walk you through the salient features and really draw your attention to the kinds of things, to the kinds of details you might want to learn about.
And tell us why this is critical to the Smithsonian.
Yeah, absolutely. Our mission is the increase and diffusion of knowledge. And, we can do that in a variety of ways. We get 31 million visitors on the National Mall each year. But at the end of the day, less than 1% of our collection objects are on display on the National Mall. So we're always on the lookout for the most compelling ways we can bring these collections to more people, and bringing them to people online and in a 3D interactive way is the best way we've found to date.
And so people with 3D printers, you're even bringing the gift shop to them almost.
Yes. The other exciting part of this announcement is that we make the raw data for these 3D models available for download for personal and non-commercial use. So if you're a teacher, you can now download, for example, a model of the Lincoln Life Mask, and you can 3D print that in the classroom. You can take that print to the history class, and you can have your students trace the furrows on Lincoln's face to understand better what the toll was on that man of the Civil War.
All right, Bob Reese of Energy Department. There is such a wide portfolio of activities there. Tell us about some things that are being transformed with technology there. We know it's happening.
Yeah, so I'd actually like to pivot off of what Gunter said, and he talked about making the raw data available. As the Department of Energy is primarily a large research and development organization, and we generate huge amounts of data. But a big piece of that is how we interact with the energy sector and how we're making lives better by getting renewables in their hands and giving them energy choices. And part of that is also making them giving them the capability to make choices through data. And so we've just launched the American Energy Data Challenge, which builds off of last year's Data Palooza event we held with the White House and the Apps for Energy Challenge. And over the course of the next 12 months, we're doing a series of challenges. In fact, the first one closes next week. That's the Energy Ideas Challenge, looking for ideas of how do we use data that we already make available to the public? What data do the public wish we would make available to them from an energy perspective? And then we're also looking for a killer idea. You know, what is the really cool app that someone might say, if I could do this with my energy data at either the individual or the utility level, what would that be? And our subsequent challenges over the course of the year will build off of that. And so we do have prize money that is going to be available. Nobody's going to get rich off of it, but there are a few thousand dollars that are available. And we'll be doing some hackathons and some other things. And so go to energy.gov or energychallenge.energy.gov and see what's available.
And, Bob, I think the interesting thing about this is that while all of these initiatives are about the agency getting closer to the customer or the public, you're actually asking the public to come to you and get closer to you and help you do your job at energy.
Well, absolutely. I think that, in the future, the future energy consumer and customer is going to be king in this. And getting them involved in making the energy choices and help defining the energy future of this country is going to be critically important. So we know where to go with the research and development, where to go with the smart grid, and where to go as we make this country less dependent on foreign energy sources.
Just give us some examples of some of the data sets that are out there, say some of the recent ones that energy has put out, because energy data could mean almost anything.
Well, it could mean almost anything. And so there's a lot of information out there that comes from smart meters and smart devices that can actually enable you to monitor the cycle of energy use in your home and give you indications of what those appliances or what those services in your house might be. And then you can go look at those and then eventually compare those to consumer options for different appliances.
We're going to take a short break now, and when we come back, we'll be talking more about how you'll be doing all these initiatives. You're listening to a Federal News Radio discussion on how information technology is helping agencies fulfill their mission, part of our special report, A New Era in Technology. It's 9:29. Our guests today are Bob Brees, CIO of the Energy Department. We also heard from Gunter Weibel, Director of the Smithsonian Digitization Program Office, and Charles McClam, Deputy CIO of the Agriculture Department. We're also joined by Mike Cross, Program Manager of USDA Commuter Benefits. You're listening to The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Emily Kopp, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
For federal employees and retirees listening today, here's important news. Open season kicked off November 11th, and Delta Dental is now an option on the Federal Employees Dental Program. Delta Dental is a dental insurance specialist with low-cost options in one of the country's largest networks. With more than 60 million enrollees and a 98% retention rate, they're making a lot of people smile. The smart choice is definitely Delta Dental. Sign up today on the benefit system. Definitely trusted, definitely affordable, definitely Delta Dental.
At BAE Systems, we are continually called upon to repair and modernize ships, technologies, and weapons systems for the U.S. Navy. That's no simple task. However, we have the workforce, experience, and technology to do the job and do it well. Knowing our work makes a difference inspires us every day. So no matter the challenge, we'll be there on the next front. That's BAE Systems. That's inspired work. Learn more at baesystems.com/nextfront.
Government technology professionals should attend GovCom 2013, the trade show featuring government AV solutions at the Washington Convention Center, December 4th and 5th. GovCom will help government agencies and the military boost collaboration, enhance security, improve reliability, and cut costs as leading AV manufacturers and solution providers showcase audio, video, conferencing, collaboration, control systems, digital signage, and visual display technologies. Visit govcomshow.org for your free registration.
Hi, I'm Wesley Hogan with Westland Financial with a mortgage update. Even though rates have moved up, they will go even higher. So don't miss out on this historic opportunity. All it takes is a 5-minute phone call to find out how we can save you hundreds or even thousands of dollars a year. Even if you've refinanced in the last 12 months, we can still do it with no closing costs. Whether it's a conventional, VA, FHA, or jumbo loan, you won't spend a dime. That's right. Nothing's rolled into your loan. We'll pay for your settlement fee, title, notary, everything. Choosing such a loan could affect your interest rate, and you will be responsible for existing lender payoff fees. Even if you owe more than your house is worth, we may be able to refinance you under the new HARP 2.0 government program. And by the way, Westland Financial is now proud to offer reverse mortgages for our clients over 62. You can't afford to be giving money away, so call us at 888-945-4105. We make loans you can live with for a long time. 888-945-4105. That's 888-945-4105. Or visit us online at westland.com.
NMLS number 3304. Not all loans apply. Equal housing lender.
Some stories are best told through pictures. Check out our Fed Photos of the Day gallery for a different perspective on the federal community. Find it on our homepage, federalnewsradio.com.
And now your DoD report brought to you by BAE Systems. America's nuclear missiles are guarded and operated by a workforce that feels exhausted, unrewarded, and unappreciated. That's the conclusion of a secret study by RAND Corporation that the Air Force commissioned late last year. The Associated Press obtained a copy of the draft report. RAND found higher than average levels of misconduct and marital troubles in the missile staff. Tune in for your DoD report brought to you by BAE Systems. Mornings on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to the Federal Drive here on 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. We're having a special panel discussion on how information technology is transforming agencies and the way they fulfill their missions. Part of our special report, A New Era in Technology. I'm Tom Temin.
I'm Emily Kopp. Our guests today are Bob Breese, Chief Information Officer of the Energy Department, Gunter Weibel, Director of the Smithsonian Digitization Program Office, Charles McClam, Deputy CIO of the Agriculture Department, and his colleague, Mika Cross. She is Work-Life and Wellness Program Strategist at USDA. And before the break, we talked a little bit about all the big initiatives that you have rolled out or are rolling out in the coming months. Mika, I want to start with you and talk about how this is affecting employees and how the new technology that you're using at Agriculture Department is letting them have a better, as you put it, work-life and wellness balance and be able to get their jobs done.
Absolutely. You know, from a transformational perspective, technology is really enabling our workforce to work more efficiently, quicker, and also be able to operate in times where there might be unplanned emergencies or events that otherwise would preclude them from coming into the traditional office. So we've really seen an increase in satisfaction ratings on the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey in the areas of work life and telework, of course, specifically. And technology has done that for the department. We tie it into our department strategy for cultural transformation, an initiative that our secretary is very committed to, in order to really enable the workforce to serve the American public in the best way possible.
And maybe you and Charles can tag team on this. I don't know who is better suited for it. But from the employee perspective, putting them out in the field with the technology, what more are they able to accomplish or what sort of things are they able to observe and realize that they weren't doing before?
Employees, for example, at the Natural Resources and Conservation Services, they have been traditionally tied to their desk, doing a lot of work requiring stakeholders to come into the office and interact with them, appointments to be made. Sometimes they were able to keep the appointments, other times they were not. With technology, we're now able to allow the employee to go to the stakeholder, go to the field where the stakeholder is, meet with them, take information, upload that information via wireless communications to our enterprise data centers and store and process that information faster than we've ever been able to do in the past. We are using technology now to extend enterprise applications down to a mobile device, whereas we can engage the stakeholder and deal with issues in the field on the ground much, much quicker than we have ever been able to do so.
So it sounds like the cycle of processing and the cycle of mission delivery had air in it before that you'd be able to let out because people can upload data right from that where they're standing.
Absolutely. You're correct, Tom. This new emerging technology, we've gone from 4G, 3G to 4G, and we're now able to allow technology to be the enabler of a lot of the capabilities that we weren't to do in the past but weren't able to do.
And, Mika, I imagine that makes things a little bit more fun, too, on the job. Maybe that helps that whole morale issue and work-life balance.
You know, I think so. And just being able to do your job better and more efficiently, you know, at our National Agricultural Statistics Service, they recently digitized the way that they process their work. And now they're using iPads. Well, they claim that they are now saving millions of dollars in productivity just simply by automating the processes that used to exist. And so you're seeing an impact on overall morale and also just in confidence in getting the mission done.
All right. I want to back out here a little bit because we've been talking about specific missions. I want to talk about the federal IT environment in general. There's been what I even call a third wave of computing coming into all markets. And so if the mainframe and the mini computer was the first wave and the client server and PC was the second wave, the third wave is wireless, mobile, more virtualization, cloud, and so forth. I'd like to get a sense of how you think that the federal environment is changing. Where is it at this point, and how do you think it relates to commercial? Gunther, why don't we start with you?
Sure. So in our case, I think specifically about the 3D initiative we launched, part of that launch was really enabled by us being able to put these very, very high-quality models on the Amazon cloud and serve them up that way. We've had tremendous demand for that website in the first week of launch. Just to give you some statistics, the website got as many hits as the overall main Smithsonian portal at si.edu. So that's a tremendous, tremendous amount of hits. And we wouldn't really have been able to support that kind of a traffic for this new launch without the elasticity that the cloud provides us in this instance.
Let me ask you about that, because without naming names, I think it's probably obvious that there is a very big federal issue with a certain website going on right now. Did you encounter any sort of problems because of the great demand on this website, or did it go smoothly?
We actually had a smallish hiccup. We were the victims of our own success, and we had to take the site down for about 10 minutes on the second day just to relaunch it in a more powerful application on the Amazon cloud. But I really am just too pleased with how many people wanted to interact with the content and see that as a badge of honor rather than a failure.
All right. And Bob, at the Energy Department, of course, the new secretary, Dr. Moniz, is trying to upgrade and modernize all of the management practices and the restructuring the organization. What's the technology environment like? How is it evolving? How does it look different from what it was a few years ago? And what do you expect it to be going ahead?
Well, sometimes we talk about a strategy of imagining a world where wires are an endangered species. And so mobility really is king.
Sell your copper futures.
Sell your copper futures, but please don't steal the copper from the electric grid. I think that, you know, mobility is a huge enabler. And in a large research and development organization like the Department of Energy, collaboration is king. And the ability to collaborate anywhere, anytime, on any device is critically important. And the outreach and the engagement that we have with international collaboration teams, with the educational institutions, and with industry through our national laboratory system is really important. And so wireless is really the future. I mean, imagine 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago, you saw your first iPad. Now you can't imagine a life without an iPad or some type of tablet device.
Of course, wireless is not free, and Charles McClam at USDA mentioned moving from 3G to 4G. There's a cost associated with that data movement. So what are you doing to mitigate those future costs and try to have some predictability when it's hard to know what the actual data usage will be from month to month?
Well, I think that, like in a lot of cost containment strategies, is looking for enterprise agreements and working with our interagency partners to combine our buying power. The General Services Administration, the administrator over there has been incredibly helpful in bringing together some of these new blanket purchase agreements and working on wireless. So that's going to help us a lot, and it's important.
I want to ask all of you guys to be honest for a minute. Tell us what, in launching these new initiatives or in planning to launch these new initiatives, the biggest challenge was in just getting it started, whether that was sort of winning over the minds or the technology. Charles, I'll start with you. I know you've got a lot of initiatives going there, but what's the biggest challenge you find overall?
Thanks for the question, Emily. The biggest challenge I've found serving in my role as the deputy CIO for USDA is that oftentimes technology folks try to drive what the end game is in terms of the solution, if you will. And sometimes in the course of doing that, initiatives get elongated and funding becomes a major challenge. Oftentimes you have what you call, in my world, requirement or scope creep. Those two challenges, funding, scope creep, sometimes get in the way of moving expeditiously with the deployment or rollout of a technology solution.
So do you find that when the idea does not come from the CIO's office, that it comes from maybe the field or another department, there's a more realistic scope to it?
I think we're somewhere in the middle, Emily.
Okay.
I think we're somewhere in the middle.
So what's worse, a GAO report or a congressional hearing?
Both.
Not much fun. And so, Mika, maybe you could follow up on that. And as you deploy these new technologies, of course.
Absolutely. You know, for our telework program, it's really interesting because I always often say that we count it as success if folks are even just able to forward their office phones to either their mobile devices or their home phones, and they're able to connect on email through the virtual desktops or VPN, and you know, they're connecting and working that way. So even though we have all these wonderful technologies, it's really sometimes a challenge to get people to utilize them. So what's nice is on the HR side, we're really enforcing use of collaborative technology tools, both for training, professional development, collaboration uses, to really expose folks to how it can enable them to do their jobs a little bit better.
So what has this done to the training requirements and the training costs? Because, you know, it was one time, you know, they had to teach people how to use mice. And yeah. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that people didn't encounter computers daily.
Absolutely. You know, and right now it's teaching us all a new skill set. Quite frankly, it's teaching managers how to manage in a virtual, flexible, modern environment. And it's teaching employees how to be more collaborative and be able to connect with folks. At USDA, you know, we're a very large department, ingrained in 150 years of culture, and have over approximately 3,000 different facilities across the country and around the world. In fact, tomorrow, one of our training events I'm hosting, we are using a blended approach. So we are connecting with 16 different states through video teleconferencing, and we're going to have desktop availability to view a webinar and have dial-in capability for those that don't have VTC locations. It's going to be a very unique approach to that. But it's teaching folks really to utilize this technology for good, to cut down costs when it comes to travel associated with different conferences, and to still connect in a virtual environment.
And Gunter, I did want to tell you, I imagine that it was a different scenario there, but still, what did you find was the biggest challenge in getting this 3D initiative off and running?
So what we really wanted to do is make sure that the tail isn't wagging the dog here, right? We've got a very exciting technology that's been deployed to transform industries like architecture, medicine, Hollywood, gaming, and we wanted to deploy it in a museum setting. And to investigate that, we had to build internal collaborations. We had to work with our educators, with our curators, with our scientists, with our conservators, and work with them side by side in trying out what this technology really means and how it could further each specific working environment within the museum and how it could support it in better executing on the Smithsonian mission. And that was tremendously exciting for us, seeing how people first hesitatingly and then more and more confidently engaged with the technology and found that it actually deeply supported what they were trying to do. So we had a curator who is an expert in a piece that's part of our launch collection, the Cosmological Buddha, which is a 1,500-year-old Buddha with low relief carving all over the body. And he was starting to work with the technology, and what he found was that using the 3D data set we could provide him with allowed him to see that piece of artwork in a completely new way, because he could now take the data set and study it while having his other source materials close at hand and really read this very difficult to read object in a completely new way and contextualize it then also for the public in the 3D viewer.
So possibly that's advancing the scholarship too.
It absolutely advances the scholarship, and that's what this curator found, that he now has a new way of looking at the object, and he derived literally new knowledge and new meaning from this object that was very well known to him already. And the other piece that we focused on was external collaboration. We couldn't have done this without external partners, so we partnered with leading industry companies like Autodesk and 3D Systems on this project, and getting those partnerships in place, syncing up on our respective missions and on our respective desires was a key component to the success here as well.
You're listening to the Federal Drive radio discussion on how information technology is helping agencies fulfill their mission. It's all part of our special report, A New Era in Technology. Our guests today are Bob Rees, the CIO of the Energy Department, Gunter Weibel, Director of the Smithsonian Digitization Program Office, Charles McClam, Deputy CIO of the Agriculture Department, and Mika Cross, the Work, Life, and Wellness Program Strategist, also at USDA. It's the Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Emily Kopp, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. We'll be back right after this short break.
Inside DISA, sponsored by Harris Caprock. Reliability never reached so far.
The Defense Information Systems Agency is tweaking its approach to buy commercial infrastructure as a service. On fedbizops.gov, DISA says as it revises the strategy for satisfying requirements for non-sensitive data in the commercial cloud, the result could be solicitation for a new contract at a significantly lowered ceiling or leveraging of existing contracts with the appropriate scope to meet this demand. I'm Lauren Larson.
In today's government environment, priorities change on a dime, so government customers need a telecommunications provider that can change at the same pace. Harris Caprock has plenty of bright ideas about how to make that happen. Ideas that enable agility, ideas that ensure resiliency, ideas that increase cost effectiveness. Harris Caprock tailors telecommunications solutions around customer needs instead of forcing customers' requirements into standard service offerings. To learn more, visit harriscaprock.com/bright ideas.
Nutrition programs.
130.
Plus weight management equals looking good. And these are just a few of the extra benefits that come with the Blue Cross Blue Shield Service Benefit Plan for federal employees. To find out more, call 1-800-411-BLUE or visit more.fepblue.org. Blue Cross Blue Shield. More benefits, more peace of mind.
The Land Warfare Industry Report, provided by Raytheon.
Just recently, the U.S. Army and Raytheon fired 84 precision-guided Excalibur 1B all-up rounds during qualification flight tests at Yuma Proving Ground, Arizona. During the testing, Excalibur 1B exhibited exceptional accuracy, with the majority of the rounds landing within 2 meters of the target, setting a new industry standard.
Do you hear that? That's a warfighter on patrol, silent as the night, but never in the dark. Raytheon third-generation forward-looking infrared thermal imaging gives warfighters an overmatch advantage more cost-effectively than retrofitting and maintaining current systems. After all, when the mission is owning the night, forward-looking takes forward-thinking. Raytheon, customer success is our mission.
Welcome back to the Federal Drive here on 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. We're having a panel discussion today on how information technology is transforming agencies' fulfillment of their missions. Part of our special report, A New Era in Technology. I'm Tom Temin.
I'm Emily Kopp. Our guests today are Gunter Weibel, Director of the Smithsonian Digitization Program Office, Charles McClam, Deputy CIO of the Agriculture Department, Mika Cross, Work, Life, and Wellness Program Strategist, also of the Agriculture Department, and Bob Rees, the Chief Information Officer of the Energy Department. Now, the folks from the Agriculture Department and Smithsonian were talking about some of the challenges in launching their new initiatives. Bob, now it's your turn to talk about the challenges you found in these data initiatives, which are really a two-way street between the industry and the public and the Energy Department with the idea that they perhaps are suggesting things that you guys should be doing?
Well, I think we're all learning a lot about crowdsourcing, and crowdsourcing is the mechanism that we're using through this energy data challenge. And so, you know, from our energy.gov website, you can participate in that. And so, you know, it's we are doing some marketing. We are doing some outreach through some of the local incubators. As I mentioned, we're going to do some hackathons, which are really good about drawing together local collections of programmers and idea generators. And we'll probably have four or five of those around the country. But crowdsourcing is a critical part of that engagement.
Now, there might be some program managers or agency executives listening to this, and most of us know what a hackathon is, but it's not quite part of the general jargon. So give us an idea of someone says, hey, I want a hackathon. That sounds good. What is it, and what do you get out of it?
Well, it's really where you take a bunch of really smart, intelligent men and women, most of them a lot younger than me, and by giving them an opportunity and a platform, a location where they can come together, and you give them a handful of problems that have been vetted to say, this is the problem we want to solve. And I think we heard from Gunter and others about making sure that the tail doesn't wag the dog, that we know what the problem is, and that we know how we want to approach solving it. And then how do we leverage technology? Give them the problem statement, give them a limited amount of time, and let them leverage their collaborative energy. And it's amazing together how they work together and help solve complex problems in real time. And at the end of the hackathon, you get a pretty much an 80% solution as to how you can solve that technical problem.
Plus coffee and pizza?
Plus coffee and pizza, or Mountain Dew and Red Bull.
And going further, though, the next step, once they give you these great ideas or they solve most of the problem, where is the impetus in the Energy Department or sort of the next motivation for staff there to really apply it on a larger scale?
Well, again, you know, the government doesn't want to do what it doesn't do best. And in this case, it's really about creating an environment and the connection between data, consumers, and people who can bring those things together. So I don't think you'll see that the Department of Energy is creating applications that consumers will then say, wow, I'm really glad the Department of Energy created this energy app. Is you're going to find these small startup companies that say, that's a great idea, and I understand how to monetize that. And that's where you're going to see these come up and really take root.
And Charles McClam at USDA, what processes do you like to keep on top of emerging technology and making sure you're ready for the challenges when you feel it's time to bring them in?
Like most federal agencies and industry providers, we have relationships with Gartner, Forrester, and other research arms across the industry to get some visibility of emerging technologies and where the magic quadrant is pointing to. Right now for USDA, we're really reaching out to companies like IBM, Microsoft, Google, HP, and looking at technology trends within their spaces as well as the research arms that we leverage. And we're seeing a big push towards cloud computing, more cloud computing. We're seeing a big push towards big data and analytics, business intelligence, and social media. So we're really arraying resources and refocusing our direction to make the most out of those technology leaps as we continue to modernize USDA on all fronts.
So agriculture was pretty early into the cloud revolution, if you will, in the federal government. I know you've been talking about it for a couple of years now, maybe several years. And are you satisfied that the security challenges and the ownership stability and all those things are pretty much behind us for the top tier, anyhow, of cloud providers?
Security is always going to be a problem that we're going to have to grapple with as we look at emerging technology across the space. And while we've put into play a comprehensive security operations center that supports ag and its IT enterprise, security is always going to be on the forefront of my mind. I think that's a challenge that's that you will see replicated across every federal agency. We're all dealing with it.
All right, and let's go to Gunter at the Smithsonian, and you're digitizing this gigantic collection. what is ahead, and how do you keep on top of what technologies? I mean, who dreamed that 3D printers would be something you could utilize and deploy? And 3D used to be expensive and difficult. Now you can do it on an iPhone practically with the processing power there. What do you look at ahead, and how do you stay on top of it?
Yeah, it's a good question. So we're really, you have to imagine our challenge. We've got 137 million collection objects. Many of those are in their nature three-dimensional. So we really have to now focus on scale. We've put 20-plus models online through our launch last week. We need to figure out how to do this much faster and much more efficiently. And so we're trying to enlist industry partners, university partners, in helping us figure out the workflows, the technologies, the processes that need to be involved in order to do not just dozens of objects, but hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of objects in a really fast time frame. And we hope to use the Arts and Industries Building, which will be relaunched as the Smithsonian Innovation Space, as the hub for that innovation and for that next stage. We're slated for about 3,000 square feet of space there to do that.
All right, we'll have to leave it there. That brings our discussion to a close, and we'd like to thank our guests, Gunter Weibel, the director of the Smithsonian Digitization Program Office, Charles McClam, who is deputy CIO of the Agriculture Department, Mika Cross, Work Life and Wellness Program Strategist at USDA, and Bob Rees, CIO of the Energy Department. You've been listening to a Federal News Radio discussion on how information technology is transforming how agencies fulfill their missions, part of our special report, A New Era in Technology. You can find this discussion and all of our coverage at federalnewsradio.com, your search term, New Era.
And keep it tuned here. Coming up after the news at 10, it's VOA Science World. We'll talk about the aftermath of the typhoon in the Philippines. Join us tomorrow morning starting at 6 for the Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Emily Kopp here on 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com, your source for federal news now.